Over the past year, we've followed the Oxford University Press as it releases each new volume in a series on the seven deadly sins. We've examined envy, greed, lust, and gluttony in a seemingly never-ending series of books that I have to keep reading, even though I've got six other books to read, and I'm still upset the Yankees lost to the Red Sox. And how in the world did the Giants lose last week? All of which brings us to the subject of anger. Anger is the fifth installment in the series on the seven deadly sins, and it is a biggie. Anger is arguably the most destructive of the deadly sins, as it leads to violence, both personal and international. Do you find anger to be a sin? Can it be managed? Can it be overcome? Can it be used for good? Call us, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Robert Thurman. He's the author of the most recent book in the Seven Deadly Sins series, and he holds the J. Tsong Kapa Chair in Indo-Tibetan Buddhist Studies at Columbia University, and he joins us from our bureau in New York City, and it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you, Neil. It's nice to be here, and that's great pronunciation of J. Tsong Kapa. You did it great.
Well, thanks. I was reading it cold, so I didn't have a chance to think about it too much and make a mistake. And I have
you
to
did
ask
really well.
I have to ask you, every other book in this series has been issued on a significant date. For example, Lust happened to come out on Valentine's Day. I think Envy or Greed, I think, came out on Tax Day. Did they time anger to come out right after the election?
I think they did. I think that's it, because they knew that one side or the other would be having to control their anger,
well,
as indeed we are.
Well, let me ask you. This is, by some reckoning, either the most or the second most serious of the deadly sins. How come?
Well, I think anger is considered very serious because it so quickly leads to violence. Actually, in the ancient tradition, pride is considered the most deadly, because pride is what leads an individual to think they're more important than God. And, you know, the seven deadly sins set comes out of Christianity and monotheism. And anger is, however, the one that leads to immediate destruction, you know, where people killed each other, killed themselves, go to war. You know, Lucifer got angry with God and got thrown into hell. It's a really bad one, anger.
Well, on the other hand, Jesus got angry and kicked over the table of the money changers.
Well, see, this is the thing. This depends. That brings up, like, how you're defining anger. In other words, Jesus was fierce in something that he did, about something he disapproved of. We don't know necessarily whether he was angry. When we say he was angry, we're projecting an internal state of mind that is similar to our own state of mind when we lose control of ourselves and become angry. And so it depends on how you define anger. If you simply define anger as being fierce, then you'd have to say that a mother who is warning her child not to stick your finger into the electric socket and shouts fiercely at the child, "Don't do that," you have to say that mother's angry. And we know that mother isn't angry. She's just being fierce. So I think we can't really project what Jesus's real frame of mind is. I think the ambiguity comes, Neil, because the word anger can be used both for a fierce action where we don't know the state of mind of the actor, and it can be used for the inner state of mind of the actor where they're so furious at something that they lose control of themselves, which is the really bad sense of anger. That's when anger is a sin.
Well, isn't there also a sense of righteous anger?
Yes, righteous anger is there, but again, does that mean fierce action driven by seeing something wrong and seeking to right an injustice? Or does it mean being righteous to the degree where you completely lose control of yourself, overreact, and you overpunish the other person? You know, someone, in other words, the kind of thing Moses was trying to head off with his eye for an eye. In other words, the kind of righteous anger where, oh, my eye, then I'm going to kill you entirely. Do you know what I mean? Rather than just take an eye. So, yes, we use anger in all of these different ways, but both in the Eastern as well as the Western kind of religious psychologies that I deal with, there's good anger and bad anger, you could say. And the bad anger is when the person becomes so enraged that they are not careful about what they do. They sort of become a tool of their own emotion, and sometimes they'll harm themselves. And certainly they will harm others that they love and things that they value they'll destroy. So that's the bad anger. You know, good anger is forceful activity, even can be aggressive sometimes, but done coolly with good judgment and appropriately.
If you'd like to join our conversation on the deadly sin of anger with Robert A.F. Thurman, our number is 800-989-8255, or you can also send us email, totn@npr.org. And let's talk with Jenna. Jenna's calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I don't think that anger is a sin at all. I think that it's a very normal emotion that everybody experiences. And I think that where you can get in trouble with it is when you let anger dictate how you react,
right.
You know, how you act and relate to other people.
So, Jenna, would you be one of those who said that in a way we're it's built into what it means to be a human being, that we're hardwired for anger?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's, I think that if, like, I know some people that seem to always be happy all the time, and I think that that is more unhealthy than just experiencing your anger or your frustration when it happens and just letting it go.
Okay. Well, this is something you address directly in the book, Bob Thurman.
I do. I think I really feel sorry for those poor people who are happy all the time. I really worry about them. But I think you said it yourself, Jenna, that, you know, you said anger is healthy and normal. You said all that, which means that people can be forceful sometimes when they want to straighten something out. But you then said also it gets you into trouble when you sort of lose control of it and you go overboard with it. And that's
yeah.
That's the only kind of anger that either the Christian tradition, the Buddhist tradition, or even the secular medical people, the psychologists today, modern ones, they all say that that kind of anger where you lose control is really bad. It's bad for the world because you hurt other people. It's also really bad for yourself. It's very destructive to the heart. It's very destructive to the circulatory system. It leads to strokes, to heart attacks, and people can have shorter lifespans by having a habit of being angry, of that type of anger where they really blow off, you know, and they lose control. The idea that you should be, you know, forceful, cheerfully, energetically intervene in situations that you think are wrong, what some people might think is anger, but you're not really out of control. Therefore, you're not really angry. You're just being forceful about what you're standing up for, what you believe in. I agree with you about that, Jenna. And if we call anger, if that's what you call anger, then that's what we would call the good anger, the non-sinful, to use Christian language, anger, or the non-addictive anger, we would say in Buddhism. We don't use the language of sin.
Mm-hmm.
But the one where you're out of control, forget it. It causes so much property damage, so much individual damage, so much self-destruction. It causes war, nuclear weapons. It's just terrible.
Mm-hmm. But what about, just to extend Jenna's point, mm-hmm. this hardwiring argument that some scientists would make, a flight or fight, for example, is a...
That's right. Well, the scientists make that based on our own materialistic worldview, you know, the idea that the mind has no power, it's only a byproduct of the brain, the idea that our instincts are ingrained and we just have to behave a certain way. And that is contradicted by a tremendous amount of evidence in history of people who actually have overcome their anger, people who are able to react to violence with still remaining loving and friendly and not hating the person who is violating them, not necessarily embracing them or saying that's great, but not hating them. I mean, Jesus is one of the original people, for example, who overcame anger and hatred and showed love even under torture. Buddha did it. All kinds of saints in the West and enlightened people in the East and saints in the East, they all did that. And there are many, many, and every day in households, you know, people who are abused or harmed by a relative or a sibling, they control themselves from freaking out, and therefore violence is avoided. Otherwise, you know, the domestic abuse and violence statistics would be right off the... They are pretty much off the charts to start with, but they'd be way off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
So it just isn't true that we are automatic, mechanical, robot-like beings who have to react mechanically all the time, and we do have the ability to exert control. It is generally not known how great a degree we can do that, because, you know, people are not really believing in saints anymore. They don't believe in higher states of awareness, but there's a lot of evidence in history that they do exist.
Mm-hmm. Jenna, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jenna.
We're talking with Robert Thurman about the latest book in the series on the seven deadly sins, Anger. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. This is
okay.
Mahadev, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin.
Yes, that is correct. And good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, Yes, with your credentials, I'm sure that you are aware of Balinese, a form of Hinduism, Agamatirtha, which I practice, and I also follow the adat, the custom and of the culture. And there, it's normal to suppress your anger, certainly in public. And in the West, we have actually borrowed a word from the Malay culture called amok, which means to go crazy with a...
Run amok, yeah.
Go stabbing, so right. Run amok. And if you could comment on suppressing the anger and possibly the use of trance to help suppress that anger. Thank you very much, and I'll take any comments off the air.
Thank you for the call, Mahadeh. And okay, on behalf of the people who have to transcribe this program, I'm sure they'll just be irritated at your language and not angry with you. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, amok is pretty easy. That's an English word. Yes. Well, the word suppression is a little we have to be careful of, because psychology, East or West, ancient or modern, says that it's very important to be fully aware of your own inner states. And so if something does disturb you and make you unhappy, either something that's happening that you don't like or something that you do like to happen not happening, in those kind of cases, then it's good to be aware that you are upset. But then you can control it. You cannot exercise it and not go with it when it wants you to run amok, so to speak, and which I think is what you mean by suppress. You don't suppress the awareness, in other words, but you suppress the manifestation, and you take that energy that would wants to jump out and jump at the object that's annoying you, and you channel it differently, and you build something else, you build a different reaction, you use it in a different way. It's sort of like a martial artist, actually. You know, one of the cardinal flaws in a martial artist is to lose control of their temper and become angry with the opponent who is attacking them, and then they inevitably lose their balance, and they're unskillful in their approach, and they lose the match. Whereas the person who doesn't get angry just sees the opponent as a sort of force of, or an energy pattern coming toward them and remains cool and calculating and trying to get that energy to diffuse itself without hurting them, they are the successful martial artist. And so similarly, in situations where you are provoked, it's much better to reroute that energy that normally just makes you blow up unskillfully and do something else with the energy. Now, the other thing is, of course, in the Eastern approach to this, the Buddhist approach, they make a big emphasis on trying to intervene in situations that you see as going wrong before you lose your temper. When you're first feeling frustrated, to develop that introspective awareness to the degree that you become aware of what it is that makes you angry, and when you see it starting to happen before you're angry, leave, take a deep breath, interrupt a person, ask them please not to go there, up-level it, change the subject, whatever it takes to intervene even forcefully or aggressively in a situation without being angry. This is considered very, very important, and this helps people. Otherwise, sometimes when people hear, well, you should suppress your anger, especially women in our culture who are overburdened by male chauvinist domineering types, such as myself, they tend to feel if you say you shouldn't be angry or suppress your anger, that you want them to sort of keep it all bottled up and then make themselves sick, feeling kind of frustrated and bottled up internally. So we just want to be careful how we use the word suppress. We want to be aware, and we want to channel energy other ways. We don't want to just bottle up and keep anger inside.
Well, let's see if we could get one more call in the minute and a half we have left. Gail, you're on the line from Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
Hi, Gail.
I think you may have just answered my question.
Great.
This is actually unprovoked anger. I was wondering what advice you could give someone. A friend of mine, the day after the election, asked me who I voted for, and I said President Bush, and she turned to me and said that if my son was injured after being drafted in the war, that it would serve me right for having voted for him. And her comments frightened me because I felt that the anger that was expressed by it was not really equal to my saying I had voted for President Bush upon being asked. And I just was wondering about advice you could give somebody on unprovoked anger like that.
In 30 seconds.
In 30 seconds. Okay, in 30 seconds, we have to love everybody and be happy about it. And people we disapprove of, we should be critical and disapprove of them. And so if that lady said that and that is her staunch belief, you know, it's something for you in your relationship that you should be aware of, that that's what she believes. But if she said it in anger, in a way that was sort of trying to be hurtful to you simply, then you're right. But the one thing you can, only thing you could teach her, the only thing you can do is not become angry yourself. Feel sorry for her for losing her temper. Just like those of us who do not approve of the administration or the behavior or the judgment of Mr. Bush,
Gail,
we should not be angry with him. We should be friendly and sympathetic.
We got no time. This is NPR News.